Hello, my name is Rebecca Reese and welcome to Digital Dissect, the podcast that observes and breaks open the music industry through the lens of digital analysis. Because I'm on a quest to make sense of the changing digital landscape by exploring questions like, how is digital media changing the culture of creative industries, and how do we take advantage of a new type of economic market that is exposing new sources of value and growth? Today I'm joined by Rob Nankulas from Motive Unknown, a marketing consultancy company that help artists grow and forge better connections with their audiences, to explore how paid digital advertising can be used by artists to support campaigns. Some of their notable works include Passenger's number 2 album Songs for the Drunk and Broken Hearted, Idol's number 1 album Ultra Mono, and Laura Marling's Grammy-nominated album Song for Our Daughter. Innovations in digital media, data, and marketing technologies have enabled a change in competition across markets, with the ability to now reach millions of new users through targeted ads. The music industry has therefore continued to explore new entrants and models for revenue, with automation tools developing customer relationships whilst retaining them for profit. Artists can, of course, do this solo by setting objectives on individual platforms and harnessing their free features, but without investing money will likely only really reach a very small pool of users. This process of digital advertising requires a careful strategy, so today we'll be discussing how to implement paid digital advertising to acquire, retain, and develop audiences, as well as what's next for digital marketing. Hi Rob, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today. How are you doing?
No problem. Hi Rebecca, very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, I'm really good, thank you. How has it been for you working with changing album releases and artists during this pandemic?
It's all been thrown up in the air, as you can imagine. I think a lot of the artists that I work with rely so heavily on touring to promote an album, so it's without that, being able to do that, it's definitely thrown up a lot of questions about when we should be releasing records, if we should be still going ahead. But I think the weird thing about this time, it's offered a lot of opportunity to try doing things a little bit differently. And yeah, it's been an interesting 12 months.
I think you have to think that extra bit hard about the strategy, don't you? Especially, yeah, not having the live element and thinking, okay, what new things can we do to fill the void?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's all eyes are turning on digital, of course. So it's been a good chance to start testing some new things that we might not have had resources to do previously. So it's been very interesting.
So in 2021, how much of a marketing campaign is digitally focused opposed to traditional marketing?
I think for quite a few years, we've been seeing a bit of a shift away from, overall marketing spends being, you know, front-loaded into things like press and radio. And I think a lot of majors are getting used to the idea of putting a lot more money into digital from the word go. You know, traditionally digital would just be a bit more of a supporting element of the budget, whereas those traditional channels would be like the main focus. But I think a lot of labels, management companies, artists are realizing now that actually you can reach, you know, a lot of these audiences online, engage them in a much more meaningful way. It obviously changes from artist to artist. You know, a lot of smaller artists, for example, you know, 100% of the budget will be on digital spend, whereas, you know, a lot of bigger artists, it might be sort of slightly more 50-50. You know, some artists are still buying TV ads, still buying, you know, traditional print media. So it's, it changes on a case-by-case basis, but a lot more than we definitely used to see.
In terms of employment in the industry, I've seen a lot more digital marketing assistants or managers in particular, like rising to management to oversee the whole label. And I think it just emphasizes how important having that digital mindset is in across everything.
Definitely. I think even if you are someone that works in a traditional marketing role, having a grasp of digital, at least how it works and how it works with what you're doing, is essential now, definitely.
So what key trends have Motive Unknown identified as important for this year? What are you currently focusing on in your digital strategies? Maybe you can touch on a few campaigns that you have going on right now.
Yeah, sure. A message we've always been trying to promote quite heavily is this idea of building artist-owned channels, using things like a CRM system, a mailing list, and a website to become the sort of central world for an artist, and, you know, not rely so heavily on third-party platforms like social media or YouTube, things like that. One example is you might have seen the music industry boycott of Facebook, and that posed quite an interesting conversation with a lot of clients around, you know, from a philosophical perspective, wanted to pull back on spending on these platforms. But actually, for a lot of artists that were mid-campaign, they thought, well, actually, we aren't spending on Facebook. We've got no way of reaching our audience. So the penny kind of dropped quite heavily that actually, without these third-party platforms, it's quite hard to reach your audiences. So building channels that you own and control and can build in, you know, in your own voice is actually more important than ever. So I'd say that's quite an important thing that we're building on, which is quite exciting. I think artists are getting much more used to the thought of it, and, you know, things like having a good website and an email list can often feel like quite a retro idea, but actually I feel like we've gone full circle and people understand why that's important.
It's interesting that you bring up the Facebook boycott, because at Cooking Vinyl, when I was working there, we actually jumped on that trend quite early because we saw that it was kind of going to overtake digital advertising as a whole. And it was a really important thing to think about. But you're right, artists were kind of freaking out because Facebook was their main way to reach more people through digital advertising. But it's interesting what you say about websites and getting that direct consumer relationship more developed. I think audience development in particular is this really growing area for a lot of labels and consultancies to really start honing in on, rather than just focusing on a campaign at certain times. It's about developing that relationship with an audience all the time.
Definitely. And I think, you know, we've kind of come out of the world of closed platform communications, things like Discord, messaging forums of like the late 90s and like early 2000s. I feel like that sort of approach is much more important now, when artists can have this quite close, small circle with their artists, and it's not, yeah, mass messaging on all these platforms. So it's interesting. And yeah, how that then builds into like a campaign strategy is definitely something we've seen a shift in throughout a lot of things we've been working on. Things like fan clubs, again, feels like quite a retro idea, but a lot of artists are adopting this idea of having a fan club now to actually facilitate that much more personal relationship with audiences, which we've seen can also have a net benefit on the actual, you know, revenue of an artist as well. So it's very interesting.
I've seen really new artists harnessing things like Discord and Twitch and places like that, which is really helping their development as a new artist. And I think sometimes more heritage artists can be quite resistant to that idea. How are you helping artists deliver physical experience digitally for their fans, especially during COVID's amplification? Like, this is the only way to get a physical experience. How in your campaigns are you helping users get that?
Yeah, totally. So I think the big obvious one is live streams. So that's kind of been the big buzzword of 2020 in music, especially, is, you know, how can we do a live stream and how can we make the most of it? That concept of trying to do, you know, doing some sort of live experience with a fan, I think is one of the biggest ways of getting back to that sort of physical interaction that's not just sort of a pre-recorded thing that lives on lives on YouTube or whatever. I think at one end you've got those obviously like the big scale things, like the sort of Laura Marling show at Union Chapel. We were quite heavily involved in sort of setting that, promoting that, even down to, you know, just artists going live on Instagram with a few people. I think having that sort of physical connection via that has been the sort of main avenue. What we've also seen is live streams in quite iconic places, like old venues and things, that's become quite a big thing. And we work with the Bank of Fontaines DC, and they've done quite a few of these from iconic places in Ireland, and they've done a few in London as well, which have really like resonated quite well with their fans.
Yeah, the Laura Marling one's really interesting, isn't it? Because I saw that she actually restreamed it and you could buy tickets again to rewatch it. And it was obviously such a popular event. And I also saw Passenger's Amazon Twitch live stream when his album was released, like his launch stream. And that was so much more engaging than any other live stream I've really watched. And that was just last month. So, you know, we've been seeing this influx for the past year.
Yeah.
And I think because there was a host there, there was like support acts. Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's funny how Twitch is becoming a bit of a destination for this stuff now, definitely. And they're going quite hard on the promotion of that within their platform, which is really interesting. Because again, it's things like Discord and Twitch, which kind of have historically fallen in the world of like gaming and gamers, but now it's kind of broadened.
It's quite cool to see the change from YouTube, isn't it? Like YouTube hasn't really been harnessed much, I feel, during this time. It's definitely Twitch just came along and grabbed everyone.
Yeah, it seems to be just the platform of the moment, which is interesting. But I have seen, a lot of artists trying to use YouTube more, definitely. You know, we work with so many artists that don't love social media, and don't love, you know, this idea of having to have a voice on these platforms. So it's looking at things like YouTube and Twitch for their output. We work with a guy called Bauer. Twitch is the only social digital platform he uses, but he just like makes beats on there with his like audience. It's just interesting that if you told someone that that was going to be the main like channel for an artist in 2021, a few years ago, they would have probably not believed you. So it's, yeah, interesting to see how things have gone.
Yeah, and video is really, really important right now, isn't it? And I suppose leading on from that, how should different marketing channels integrate and support each other, especially social media channels? How do you choose which platform to focus on more?
So at the start of a campaign, you know, we're talking about, you know, what the campaign is. A big part of that is, you know, discussing what the audience looks like, whether that's the existing audience we're trying to tap into or audiences we're trying to grow. So I think we'll do a bit of sort of research into identifying, you know, age brackets, demographics, what are those sort of affinity audiences connected with this artist or project, and then kind of work backwards in terms of the platform splits. Instagram and Facebook are still the platforms we spend the most money on in terms of digital advertising, mainly because they've got the most advanced sort of targeting and tracking infrastructure. So it just means you get a lot more value out of your spend, whereas, you know, something like Snapchat and TikTok are still very new, so the targeting from a music perspective is still quite broad and not very specific. So yeah, we'll do a little bit of research to kind of identify who we think that audience is to start with, and then we'll sort of allocate a lot of spend into testing different audiences, different platforms, and seeing what sort of response we get.
Touching on that as well, today I really wanted to hone in on paid advertising more so than the strategy, because a lot of companies and artists find it really hard to know when to invest. And when you're putting together a digital marketing strategy, it's firstly focused on customer acquisition, and then it's focused on customer conversion and experience development. And then thirdly, it's about retention and growth. So when you're looking at advertising, how does it fit into this life cycle? What advertising may you implement at each of those three stages?
Sure. So I think with a music campaign, you've got all of these sort of moments, these drops leading into an album release. From an advertising perspective, a big focus for us is creating what's called a remarketing audience. So this is anyone that engages with different content on different platforms. And we use single releases, video releases throughout a timeline to grow that remarketing audiences by testing different, what we've called wider audiences. So by the time we get to album release, which is the sort of critical mass for campaign, we've got a really engaged, really sizable audience we can activate into making sure that the album release has as much impact as possible. What that means in terms of an advertising flow is a big focus of what we do is focusing on video engagement, this idea of warming up these different audiences with different pieces of content, feeding them through what you'd refer to as like a content funnel, before then activating them at the end to actually do something, i.e. go and buy an album or go and stream it or something like that.
Absolutely. At the start there, you mentioned looking into the audiences, first of all, to see who is that first engaging audience. What is the importance of an audit to implement strategy and assess consumer behavior and engagement in order to set proper goals?
Totally. I think the first place to start is always doing a bit of research. You're looking at things like Spotify-related artists, Last.fm-related artists. Facebook also has a really great tool called Facebook Page Insights, which you can attach a Facebook page into, and it will give you lots of information about affinity audiences around the people that are connected to your existing page. So that can help give you some pointers in terms of where to start. I think what's really interesting with advertising is we'll often work with managers and artists that have quite a specific idea about what the audience is around an artist. But actually, once you start testing some different things, you can end up finding that different audiences react in quite different ways. You may think exactly where your audience is, but actually, once you start testing this stuff, you might find out something different.
Once you've figured out what different audiences are on different platforms and you understand what your goals are for a certain ad campaign, what you want to get out of it, who you're going to target, you've collated all your keywords. Like you said, you might look at similar artists on Apple, Deezer, Spotify or Last.fm or Bands in Town, and then you figure out who the most reoccurring are. And then that's like your pool of keywords that will support you being able to reach more audiences. How do you figure out your spend and how much budget is going to be allocated to your ad?
Great question. So I think a lot of it is, very dependent on what you're trying to achieve at the time, like you say. So if you are a new artist, you're launching, a new single with a new video. If you're a new artist, I would say it's like really important just getting as many eyeballs on the video as possible. So I think how much budget is always a bit of a tricky question. So obviously it's got to kind of fit into the scheme of the artist as a whole, how much budget there's going to be for future sort of bits of activity. But say if you had £300-£500 or something, you could then start to look at breaking that out across different platforms and then different lengths. The less budget you have, maybe you don't do as many platforms or you don't run it for as long. So usually we would start by saying, how could we run maybe some YouTube spend, a bit of Facebook spend, and a bit of Instagram spend for, say, 7 days. That's usually a little bit of a starting point if there's a video. And then from there, it's just about starting to tweak this stuff once you get running and just start to see where the results are and try and move budget around.
What is the risk with maybe spending too much within a short period of time?
Essentially, the ad platforms work in a way that they essentially bid into advertising space online. If you're spending at quite a high rate per day at a certain audience, it means that it's going to drive the overall costs of the advertising app, because the campaigns need time to optimize, find the right people for what you're trying to achieve, whether that's getting someone to watch a video or click on a link. The ad networks they need time to optimize them to find them, essentially achieve the best cost, whatever you're trying to do. So if you're trying to spend a lot of budget in a smaller amount of time, the platforms haven't got time to do that process. So it will mean that you get higher costs. So especially if you're a newer artist, generally speaking, there isn't that time pressure that we've, spend loads of money in a very short amount of time. So it's much better to take a little bit more of a low and slow approach. So it just gives you time to kind of test a few things, really.
And for smaller artists who maybe are just starting out with advertising, is it worth putting that like tenner you saved up on an ad, that £20?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, if you've got a really quite small amount of budget, then just focusing on one platform or one thing that it might make the most sense for you, whether it's you've got an Instagram post that it announced that your album is out today, and you might want to put £50 behind that and try and test a couple of different audiences. That is still, in the grand scheme of things, of impact. It might not be enormous, but it might give you some learnings as to understanding where your content fits and who's actually engaging with your music. So yeah, it's definitely worthwhile. I think there's just always got to be a little bit of realism about what you can achieve.
And when you're running ads, you're understanding your audiences better as well. You're seeing who's reacting. Maybe if your goal is to achieve more click-throughs, you're seeing who is actually reacting to that ad. And so there's a lot of data coming in. You've obviously looked at a lot of data in order to set up your ad. How should data be used responsibly?
So from a data privacy perspective, I think it's obviously it's something that a lot of artists are very sensitive to. I mean, people in general now are so hot on this. I think the best approach with this stuff is to be really upfront with the fan base and just say, if we're driving you to our website, we are collecting data about you with your permission, but we're actually using that information to, separate different tiers of fans, essentially, so you're not super serving the wrong audience, if that makes sense. A lot of people think that this idea of remarketing and using your data to sell you something is obviously a thing, and it's usually done badly by big retail where you just see 10 ads for something. But actually, we use data as much to exclude people from stuff as we do to include them, if that makes sense. So it means that actually it stops the risk of people being super served. So I think that's just the kind of flip way to think about it. But I think the best way from an artist's perspective is to just be really upfront and honest about it and say, listen, we're not here to try and, super serve you or anything. We're just here to try and improve your experience as a fan. And I think then, yeah, from a, you know, marketeer perspective, it's like having that in mind that, you know, not having too much of, like, say, a sales message, for example, and super serving audiences with that message too much. And that's where we can use things like remarketing data to limit the amount of messaging people are seeing.
And I think for artists or brands even that don't have a marketing team behind them or a label team behind them, it's remembering if you're setting up a mailer or you're setting up like a closed group and you've collected people's data, you need to be acting responsibly and just having that in the back of your mind. It's an admin thing that's easy to forget, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, like I say, I think people, especially with so much misuse of data in the modern world, I think people do appreciate, you know, and it's reaffirmed that things are being used responsibly. So that is good.
I also wanted to touch on the attention economy, which I think has quite an interesting relationship to digital advertising. Mark Mulligan released a really insightful piece recently where he said that music subscriptions are the worst possible ecosystem in which to monetize the attention economy. And in online media, the more clicks means more ads, which means more ad revenue. And in music subscriptions, it's sort of a fight to the death for the slice of a royalty pot. So you've got the marketing side, you've got the streaming side here. But he concluded that the music industry has developed an attention dependency in the least healthy environment possible. I'm interested into how you feel that ads are relying on an attention dependency to be successful.
It's a good question. I think they definitely are relying on, you know, the attention of people online, and how we can harness that is obviously quite difficult. I'm a big believer that people, you know, dislike advertising for two reasons. Either they see too much of it or they don't see content that's relevant to them. Well, a big problem with advertising in general is this old idea of, you know, spray and pray advertising. We're just going to try and hit as many people as possible, regardless of how relevant they are in relation to what we're trying to do, has created this quite difficult conversation around advertising that people generally think it's a negative thing. But actually, I think what people don't realise is because of how accurate you can put the right content in front of the right people. Because, like, I don't know if I'm biased about it, but, you know, if I see a sponsored messaging for something that I'm actually interested in, I don't mind that it's sponsored. And if I don't see it too much, you know, that finding that balance is really important. You know, we do rely on people's attention, and getting their attention online is becoming harder and harder, especially with the decline in things like organic reach on platforms like Instagram. It relies so heavily on advertising to prop that up. But I think, yeah, music out of a lot of things is definitely the not as bad end in terms of advertising and the content you're putting in front of people.
I think when you understand the advertising ecosystem, it's easier to like ads, isn't it? And it's interesting what you say about not minding seeing certain sponsors, because sometimes if I see ads being served to me on my Instagram feed, sometimes it's a bit of a compliment. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm actually part of that audience pool that's been shown this particular artist or something, which is quite fun.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, for so many smaller acts that, you know, 5-10 years ago would have relied so heavily on tastemaker media to actually reach an audience, any artist and manager can do it now. You know, just really understand how to leverage these platforms. You know, they're all free and available to anyone to actually use. So I think that offers a very interesting opportunity for people to get the word out in a way that they haven't been able to before.
And that is it, isn't it? There's all these social media channels have allowed us to market ourselves for free. And that leads me on to my next question. Do you think that social media has changed marketing budgets? And how much should we be investing in, or what free practices should we be using? Like, what mix do you try and get in your campaigns?
Firstly, to your first point, you know, we're big believers of getting people into their own channels that they can control and, you know, have 100% reach with their audience. So it's this idea of using social channels as a springboard to get audiences from the, you know, from social media channels into something like a website or a mailing list or a forum is much more important. I think, obviously we spend so much money with these platforms. Got to be slightly careful about how much you're investing in actually building your audiences on platform. But, you know, we work with a lot of bands that have been around for sort of 10, 15 years, early 2000s, when having like a big Facebook page following, for example, was the big thing. And that was the big focus to get like hundreds of thousands of likes on Facebook, which now kind of doesn't really feel that meaningful anymore. A lot of that money, a lot of that budget went on building that platform, and actually maybe a better use of the spend would be using the audiences on the platform and onboarding them somewhere else that you can have access to indefinitely. and can control. So I think, yeah, that's something to always, you know, keep in mind. But in terms of digital budgets, when I'm mapping out a campaign, 90% of them are going on social media.
Something I've battled with is Instagram and how it's really hard to generate a good click-through rate because you can't put links in posts. You have to direct someone to the bio, to then a link tree. They have to then search again. So in my practices, I tend to try and create a community within the platform. But obviously, other social media platforms are often used to generate traffic that you can then send over to Spotify, for example, to try and translate them into active streamers. That's interesting in terms of how I've maybe used the different platforms.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. Instagram is tricky that you can't put a link on an organic feed post. But that's why I think this idea of, instead of always asking your fans to directly do something, it's pivoting towards this idea of engagement over action. I do wonder when, you know, we're going to reach critical mass with something like Instagram. It's happened with Facebook. You know, Facebook just the bottom fell out of it and everyone went over to Instagram. I do wonder when that's going to happen with Instagram, essentially, and where are we all going to go.
Yeah, digital disruption really allows for new entrants to the market, doesn't it? Or innovation from existing platforms. What alternative revenue streams have you been focusing on as a result of all these new things popping up?
So, yeah, I mean, another big part of the most fundamental philosophy is D2C, so direct consumer, and that in the absence of touring revenue, artists were like really realize that they had to maximize revenue where they could. So a big part of that was like really drilling into this idea of, you know, artist merch, whatever, but what is like a proper clothing and, you know, product offering they can roll out throughout a year, and then leverage these platforms from a sort of e-commerce perspective. Because things like Facebook and Instagram were born from e-commerce, essentially. They are e-commerce advertising platforms, so they are really quite good at driving revenue for an artist if you know what to do with them. So that's a big conversation, yeah, we've been having with a lot of artists recently.
And I've seen this year as well, purchasing and buying on like Bandcamp or just buying merch or in general, purchasing anything has become a real social experience, hasn't it?
Definitely on the Bandcamp front. I mean, the rise in that platform over the past sort of 12 months has been massive, but in a really wonderful way, actually, like the Bandcamp Fridays and things like that, where they're giving away revenue share and, you know, seeing the communities that surround artists on Bandcamp is really nice. And I think it kind of goes to that point we were saying earlier about these kind of closed platform communities where, you know, they don't live across everything, but they live and exist on Bandcamp. It's a very specific thing, but it's been, yeah, very great to see.
I saw that Bandcamp have now reached, I think fans have now paid artists over 600 million, was it? Which is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And yeah, no, it's a really good platform that we'd like to do more and more with over the coming months.
So alternatively to digital advertising, going back to using free practices on platforms, it's really important to harness these to create an organic growth, right? Like right at the beginning, before you know where you're going to spend your money. So what key practices are, what comes to mind here is like making sure you're harnessing like highlights on Instagram, or you're using pinned features and making sure your links are up to date. What would you recommend are the first few things that you harness on each platform?
So I think, you know, we're just where social media is concerned in general, just having some sort of consistency is really important. It doesn't necessarily mean doing 10 posts a week and, you know, making it super different each time. Just find some sort of regular rhythm that works for you and just try and stick with it. I think there are things like curated Spotify playlists and stuff that can be really helpful to, you know, use as content to then post online, create something to talk about. I think that's often a big challenge for new artists is, you know, have I got enough to talk about to post X amount of times a week? But thinking of initiatives like that, I think are really, really interesting, and just, yeah, trying to stick with them more than anything. There are a lot of platforms that are free to use, like MailChimp, for example, is free up to 2,000 users. Yeah, it's getting in good practices and starting to build them from an early point. And by the time you need to start paying for these things, you should have a fairly sizable audience that you can start doing other stuff with anyway. So I think, yeah, there's plenty of things out there.
Yeah, it's about getting really creative, isn't it? When I was at Cooking Vinyl, we worked with this brand new artist who didn't have that big of a following on Spotify. And we managed to brainstorm a ton of ideas, and one was for him to start creating an industry-focused podcast with loads of different guests, and then he would do little producer webcam sessions that we then translated into YouTube content. They took place on Twitch, but then we'd also post clips on socials. He was using Discord, and it's about finding all these different platforms that work for you where you can get that community and then create content and share it in different ways.
Definitely. I think the key to all of this is the artist or whoever finding a platform that works for them. I think it really falls down with, you know, artists that just aren't fans of social media that, you know, can migrate to places like Twitch.
What do you think of influencer marketing?
It's an interesting beast. It's something that we've done a fair bit with now across some different types of campaigns. The issue with influencer marketing is, you know, from a digital ad perspective, everything can be measured pretty much. A lot of things can be measured on these platforms, which can give us a very firm idea of the value we're getting from the spend that we use to judge performance and things like that. Influencer marketing is a much harder beast because you just don't have those metrics and you don't have those benchmarks to work with. We worked on a TikTok influencer campaign in which, you know, this content and the music is seeded out to a selection of different influencers. The campaign happens, you get this many views on the content, but then that's kind of it. And it's really hard to understand the effect that has as part of a broader picture, because a lot of the platforms that these influencers live on are so disconnected from consumption platforms. We can do graphs of streaming against influencer views, but it makes it very hard to directly attribute the two. I think if you've got, you know, enormous global campaign where you're spending across multiple platforms at multiple audiences, and then maybe, you know, an influencer campaign would slot in quite nicely as part of that. The challenges are with having conversations with managers, you know, saying, do I think it's worth it? And it's like, you know, if your overall budget is this and you're going to spend a large portion of that on an influencer campaign that we can't actually measure the effectiveness of, doesn't make it quite a hard question to answer, if that makes sense. But in certain campaign situations, it makes total sense. There are a lot of artists out there that are a lot more sort of, I guess, lifestyle-esque than, you know, a lot of more niche artists. So it's test by test basis, but I think there's definitely work to be done on trying to understand how effective it is, because the entry point from a cost perspective is often quite high. And, you know, music campaigns, unless you're sort of a major label artist, aren't endless. So it's got to be really drill into the value that you get from them.
It's interesting that we've spent a lot of this conversation talking about how much data you can get and different ways to harness it. But at the end of the day, there's still these big markets where you can't get the data and it is more of a guessing game. And I guess that's why at the beginning, it was really hard to work out why things were blowing up on TikTok so randomly, because it was a new platform. We didn't have any way of tracking, like, you know, even all the licensing issues. There's still that gap of guessing. And I suppose, how sustainable is that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not just in music, but in, like, you know, actual, you know, big retail and the e-commerce world, influencer marketing is so important. I was reading quite an interesting article recently, actually, about this idea of micro influencer marketing, where so the idea is actually, instead of having, say, 5 people that have got 5 million followers each on TikTok, it's about having 20 or 30 influencers that have like 50,000. And apparently, you know, this idea that actually, because the communities are smaller, could actually be more effective. So will we see a bit more of that sort of thing? Maybe. We're trying to encourage a lot of the label clients that I work with is, you know, using these different artist fan bases that are on the label to sort of be influencers for each other. So, you know, you have one band over here release an album, then the other bands on the label post about it, you know, to their audiences. They take on that role of being the influencer. But it's essentially a free way of, you know, labels reaching enormous audiences for nothing. And it comes with a bit more of a sort of contextual cosign from the person that's doing it. You know that those two bands have a relationship. So when they say to go and listen to this record, it's a lot more genuine because, you know, there's like an existing relationship there. So I think that sort of style of influencer marketing, I think, is something that we're going to see more of.
Yeah, some influencer marketing is really clever, isn't it? You just don't realise that that's what's happening, like with those little communities when you get bands in certain areas of the country that come together and all their fans are kind of crossing over. But we've seen the role of the influencer change a lot over this past year. I think people are more inclined to call people out for being irresponsible, especially in light of all the cultural conversations going on. People are looking for more responsible role models online. We've then got doctors sort of blowing up on TikTok and things like that. It's become a lot more educational. So yeah, it's interesting how influencer marketing is changing. And like you say, looking at those micro influencers.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. It'd be interesting to see how it develops for sure.
So I just want to close up speaking briefly about emerging territories. You've recently worked on a Songhai Blues campaign. Songhai Blues are from Mali, I believe.
Yes, correct.
And then they came over to the UK and they got their record deal. And I think their story is absolutely incredible, how successful they are from where they kind of came from.
Yeah.
Has that campaign allowed you to look at emerging territories more? And how are different territories reacting to your current strategies? How do you change to meet those different places?
Definitely. So I think, it's something that's really worth bearing in mind with a lot of these emerging markets is, as in the UK, like in the US and Europe, habits and like social media habits of like young people and what people in general are quite similar. But especially when you get into places like, you know, Asia and definitely any sort of African markets, people's consumption of how they use the internet is totally different. So you do need to sort of tailor your approach in different ways. I think a good example of that is working on the Fela Kuti catalogue with Partizan. And Africa is a really important market for them. But actually, all of our traditional sort of Facebook and Instagram-esque marketing really doesn't make sense in those markets. So it's how you can use things like YouTube in a way that you wouldn't necessarily use it here. The same goes for a lot of South American markets, for example, like YouTube is such an important platform. So it's actually how you can leverage that in a way that's more meaningful for that audience than, you know, the likes of traditional social media, that we consider traditional social media anyway.
So you're looking much more at streaming in terms of audio streaming or video streaming and how you can optimize that more. So because in these markets it is the free platforms that are doing well, subscription models haven't really entered these markets yet, have they?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, a lot of YouTube is the big one for sure, and how you can, you know, YouTube's a big part of a lot of strategies anyway, but it's putting a lot more focus on that in those markets to really double down on those audiences.
Cool. Well, this has been a really, really insightful conversation. We've spoken about different strategies for different socials, advertising budgets, how to create ads, and about emerging territories and kind of the myths around the attention dependency and influencer marketing. So it's been really great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's had a wonderful time.
Rob for being on Digital Dissect to delve deeper into digital advertising and demonstrate how vital it is to remain digitally and data conscious when working in any creative role. Despite existing perceptions around influencer marketing and attention dependency on ads reliant on click-through rate, the strategies that Rob addressed have revealed the ease and practical impacts of spending for user development and retention. If you found that conversation useful, then please subscribe to Digital Dissect on the podcast app of your choice for free to be notified when the next episode drops. Please get involved at rebeccareese.org/digitaldissect with your thoughts and opinions, and follow digital.dissect on Instagram to join in the journey as we figure out the complexities of the music industry. Please go and give a review as it helps others find the podcast much easier. Thank you again to Rob and all the team in the show notes.